Donald Black joins me on episode 28 of the podcast. Donald is predominantly a tremolo player, using the instrument to great effect across the range of traditional Scottish music. He learnt many of the tunes he loves from accordion music, emulating the sound on the tremolo harmonica. Donald's musical career started quite late in life, and since then he has performed around the world, appearing at the Spa Convention and even in Moscow. With 5 albums to his name, Donald has also recorded 2 tracks with the great Charlie McCoy. His music summons the beautiful scenery of the misty glens of Bonnie Scotland. A word to my sponsor again, thanks to the Lone Wolf Blues Company, makers of effects pedals, microphones and more, designed for harmonica. Remember, when you want control over your tone, you want Lone Wolf.
Hello, Donald Black, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Neil.
So you're from the west of Scotland, and that's the music you play, Gaelic harmonica and other sorts of traditional Scottish music. So maybe talk a little bit about the west coast of Scotland and where you're from and the music tradition around there.
I come from a very small part of Argyll, the Firth of Lorne, which is a small village, Benderloch. It's north of Bowen in the West Highlands. The son of a labourer, we were just ordinary working people, and an aunt sent me a harmonica for my Christmas once when I was the age of 4. We weren't in the tradition of exchanging presents. We couldn't afford it at the time, and I always had a harmonica since. I never took it seriously, however, until much later in life. Sometimes I would sit at the fireside with my mother, who played the harmonica. We played pipe and Gaelic music together, and sometimes a bit of ragtime, a bit of country, or a bit of pop, and that was that. It was a tremolo that I was sent at the time, because I didn't know that's what they called it. It was a tremolo harmonica I always found enjoyment with when playing and throughout my life.
So about the west coast of Scotland and the Gaelic influences, for some of the people listening who aren't from the UK, I mean, that's a very beautiful part of the UK and a very beautiful part of the world. And, you know, the scenery there and the landscape, I think, plays quite a significant part, doesn't it? Is that something, you know, maybe gets into the music?
Yes, there are particularly slow pieces. I love, my favourite tempo is the slow air. And a lot of our slow airs, they are a broken heart, as all over the world. There's emigration and reflecting on the country they came from. And there is the beauty of the surrounding area. And so many of our lovely slow airs, and we have quite a lot of them, they are pertaining to the love of one's domain, where there's mountains and sea and what have you.
And then perhaps explain a little about the term Gaelic, because Gaelic is the language and it influences the music.
Well, the language itself is ancient. It's very, very old. We got it originally from the Irish, and it's way back in history that it came from. And it's a very innocent language. I don't think there's any foul language like we have in different languages, the swearing. If somebody swears in Gaelic, it's very mild. It doesn't offend anybody. So it's a very innocent language, and it's a very natural one. People feel what they're saying at the time very much. There's a lot of emotion goes into it, and humour, incredible humour as well. But light humour, not heavy stuff that is difficult to understand. It reflects a way of life which is extremely rural, small crofts where people would help each other. The ethos of profit-making didn't come into the culture until probably the 20th century, with television and radio, etc., etc. So commercialism, it came in a wee bit, you know. But basically at the root of the language is a lovely, lovely, genuine innocence.
Beautiful, yeah, and that maybe reflected it in the music. So again, you're from the west coast of Scotland. So what about the music scene and the sort of the Scottish traditional music scene around there and the instruments played, and how you got interested in all that?
a very early age. My mother loved music, and all we heard was the name Bobby McLeod. Now, you may have heard of Jimmy Shand, and quite rightly, he was on the east coast of Scotland. He was a fantastic player. He had his own band, and he travelled the world, and he was well-known down in England and Australia, New Zealand, you name it. However, we had Bobby McLeod on the west coast. He's regarded as being the person who took bagpipe music and Gaelic music, and particularly focusing on that music on the accordion, on the piano accordion particularly. And there were others who were then started to copy Bobby, and the whole country now, the young ones, there's many, many, many young ones playing the accordion. So the first influence on me musically was the music of people like Bobby McLeod, who played accordion. So when I got seriously interested in the harmonica was many years later, to be 27 years ago to be precise, an accordion player called Phil Cunningham, who is hugely regarded both here and abroad. He's probably the most successful accordion player we've ever had. He was a musical director of a program, a Gaelic program that was going out on BBC. He asked me, that was in 1993. He came into a pub I was playing in for fun here in Glasgow. I learned a few tunes with just for fun with a couple of guys from the Hebrides, and he had me playing, and he thought it was the right hand of an accordion he was hearing, which didn't surprise me because that's what I was trying to emulate. So that was the influence on me for the harmonica was the accordion players. And there was an orthodoxy from the 50s spread not just in the Highlands, but right throughout Scotland, as it has in Ireland too, particularly with the button accordion. But that's been very strong now in the last few decades in our society here. So that was the influence, and that's what I was trying to emulate.
Do you think particularly the tremolo matches the sound of the accordion over the other sorts of harmonicas?
Yes, for me. I mentioned the Irish players. The Irish players play mainly what we call the two-row button box, box being an affectionate name for accordion. And they play incredible stuff. But the sound of the reed, or the way they're tuned, is quite different very often to the piano accordion. So I play the Echo Harp series, the old Echo Harp series that had been on double sides, that have been on the go for quite a few decades in Scotland for Highland music. But when it comes to the Irish stuff, I play, have a preference for the Japanese, Suzuki and Tombo. The sound of the reed is just that bit less soft, a slightly harder sound, but the sound it creates is, it's a lovely sound, and it emulates the button accordion of the Irish, for Irish music.
So, yeah, so again, going back to when you started out playing, like you say, you got your first tremolo harmonica when you were 4 years old. And then from that age, like you say, your mother played, so that's fantastic. You used to play with your mother. And,
yes.
And then, so how did you evolve your harmonica playing then? Because obviously, as you mentioned there, you didn't really seriously get into playing until the sort of early 90s. So, you know, how did you develop your playing and, you know, during that time?
Well, I was coming from a very low base of playing anything in terms of ability or in terms of repertoire. I hadn't got many tunes, so I got the bug. It was like a drug, and it's so much so yet. I found that I got so much into it. I thought, if somebody of Phil Cunningham's caliber likes what I'm doing, I'm going to do something about it. I got really threw myself into it. I contacted probably the most prominent record label in Scotland for traditional music, Green Tracks. And I contacted Ian Green, the sole director, and asked him if he'd be interested. And I sent a demo, and he said yes. I then met one of the guests. We got a couple of guests on it. One of them was an incredible musician and human being. It's Malcolm Jones, who was with, when I say was, they've now finished, they've retired, the Celtic rock band Grundrig. And Malcolm plays accordion, he plays pipes, he plays drums, but particularly guitar. He's a world-class guitarist. He was on the album, and I ran into him again, and we formed a duo, and we played for about 13, 14 years together here in Germany, Denmark, and all over Scotland, particularly the Highlands. But he fell ill some years back, and he had to slacken off a bit with the workload, so I had to look for other people.
So this album was your first album?
It was my first one, yeah.
In 1995, the West Winds album.
Yeah, West Winds, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so your first album, you know, like many, you know, you're dipping your toe in the water. So, you know, you met with Malcolm Jones, as you say, from Runrig. Mm-hmm. You know, how did that come together? You got a very high-caliber musician to play with you on your first album.
How it happened was that there is no ego with Malcolm. He you know, sometimes people who are held in very high esteem, sometimes on the odd occasion, they pick and choose, and Malcolm does to a degree, but he's very easy to get on with, easily approached, and someone who is very humble. It just clicked, we clicked, and I strove to create playing that was of a standard that was hopefully doing his some justice.
And so was that connection made through the record label initially? Or?
No. It was through my having met him. He was contacted by the producer for a couple of tracks, and he said, "We'll try and get Malcolm on." And I did, and I couldn't believe Malcolm Jones from Runrig was sitting in the bowels of the earth over in Edinburgh in a tiny studio, and he's sitting next to me, and I think, my God, I was shaking like a leaf, you know, with nerves. But it didn't take long to get to know Malcolm, and we still do. I'm still in touch with him very much. He is quite incredible.
So maybe that's a, you know, an indication, you know, the popularity of the harmonica, because I don't think there'd been a lot of Scottish traditional music played on the harmonica. Are you one of the first, maybe, or certainly best known at the moment?
Well, yes, and I don't want to elaborate too much on this, but the tremolo players have been up against it with Richter tuning, you know, the German Richter tuning, which has a particular place. But we needed the Asian tuning, and very often the lower notes were not available on the Echo series particularly, which is the one mostly that the Scottish guys played. And they got fed up at times with just one note missing at the bottom end that meant that they couldn't always get the tune, and it was no fault of their own. So I think that, therefore, by definition, there's been others that if they had non-Richter tuning on the tremolos, they might have done much more. I was lucky. I ran into an absolute gem of a guy again, Rick Epping. He lives in Ireland. He's American. He worked for Honor in Virginia. He was the production manager in one of the factories there. And I met him at a festival here in Glasgow, and he said, "Would you like to join the workshop I'm doing with Brendan Power and Mick Kinsella?" And I did. And he knew that I had problems with the tremolo. I said, "It would be nice to get the big one, the double sider, done in the keys of A and D as well, because it was only available in C and G." Oh, he got me 3 or 4 dozen of them made, special order. So I'm the only one in the world with them. And that opened up a whole new world, because I could get the big one, the 57-120, it's the big tremolo. I could get that in C&G and A&D. So that helped very much.
Did you play only tremolo on the West Winds album, or was there diatonics on there?
No, I didn't play much diatonic on it at all. If I'd played any, I don't think. I played the octave tuned on a couple of sets, but it was mostly tremolo.
So this album, it got you some exposure, yeah, and got you invited to play at some festivals, you know, some gigs, got you some gigs, etc. So this is a bit of a springboard, this album, and you went on tour with Malcolm Jones as a result of recording that album.
Yes, we toured the Highlands and Islands many, many times, and I also played in Germany with them 2 or 3 times over to Germany, and in Denmark, in Tuna Festival, it's a big traditional music festival there.
There's a few different styles on there, a nice song called mm-hmm. Touch of Irish, which is good. And another one, which is a Shetland Reels, which does some nice unison.
Shetland Reels, I love them. They're famous for the reels, the Shetlanders. There's a Nordic influence there. They play a lot of fiddle in Shetland, and there's some great players, one of them being Ali Bain. An album after that, as Flo Ayrza did, Hill Road album, Ali's on a couple of tracks with me. And he is regarded very, very highly again, and he duets with, coincidentally, with Phil Cunningham, who had me playing in the first place. Yes, I love Shetland music. I wanted to do some, you know, add a bit of diversity to the album too, and just do different textures, different sounds, different tempos.
And then this led on to you doing your second album called Closer Home 5 years later, also with Malcolm Jones playing with you again,
Well, I felt within myself as I was progressing a bit and playing with Malcolm, I thought, I would love to do better than the first album I did. And then I was hugely fortunate to be in the company of Malcolm Jones, and I took advantage of that fact. And we did it as a joint venture, Donald Black and Malcolm Jones. And it should have been Malcolm Jones and Donald Black, but that's the way he wanted it. So we did it as a joint venture, and we were conscious of the fact that it would be nice to mix it with different tempos and different textures. He uses slide guitar on a couple of tracks. One in particular, a slow air we did, called Eilean Scalpa in Ó Hairig. It means Island of Scalpa near Harris. It's in the Hebrides.
And again, like you say, lots of different tempos, textures. But I think what's interesting is to talk around some of the different forms of music. A lot of people are interested in playing traditional music now on the harmonica. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, you've got the Two Jims, which is the pipe march.
Yes.
You've got Kitchen Maid, The Thief and the Tailor, which is a pipe jig. So what about those pipe tunes?
Fundamentally, many pipe tunes have the flattened seventh, and it's referred to, I think, technically as Mixolydian. Some of those tunes, not all of them, but some of them require a change in the tuning in one reed. I did it on one of the models, the tremolo models, 5580, which was Richter tuned, but I changed the key of A. At the top end, there was G sharp, and at the bottom end, G sharp. So I flattened those to G, and that facilitated being able to play so many, many more pipe tunes that hitherto could not be played on the harmonica, because that special note that was required for many of those tunes was simply not available.
So this is on a tremolo?
Yes.
So, of course, it's not possible to bend a tremolo, is it?
No. For one simple reason, the reeds would just buckle. You know, you put a lot of pressure on the reed when you're bending. If you're bending in the 10 hole, you're putting a lot of pressure on the notes generally anyway. So when you go to bend it, you're emphasizing it more, and it would have damaged the reeds. It's not feasible. No.
Yeah, the reeds are very delicate, aren't they, on the tremolo?
Very, very delicate, yeah.
Do you know why they are so much thinner than, say, diatonic reeds?
Yes, for the sound. There's a lovely soft sound comes from the tremolo. And the ones I mentioned for Irish music, the reeds are that bit thicker. So you're getting a more singular sound from the reeds. It's akin to the button accordion, which is, it's got that different sound. It's a lovely soft sound, but the drawback is that they damage very, very easily, the tremolos, particularly the Echo series. Not because they were badly built, the reeds, but just in order to get that sound, they had to be that bit thinner.
So you play quite a few different sorts of harmonica on the Closer Home album. So you play, obviously, tremolo, you play some diatonic on those as well, but you also play chromatic as well, don't you? So I think I'm probably mispronouncing this, but Eilean Achio, is it?
Eilean Achio. It's not as it looks, the pronunciation in Gaelic. I'm no expert in Gaelic. I can't speak the language. I never got the chance when I was very young, but my friends, many of them, speak the language. And they tell me that it's Eilean Achio, and it means Island of Mist. It's the Island of Sky, or Misty Isle.
You're playing chromatic on that one, are you?
No, I was playing tin hole, but there was an introductory part where there was a question and answer thing done by myself and Malcolm before we launched into the melody proper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to try and emulate the echo that you might get in the Kulin Mountains and Skye to make it more atmospheric. So the chromatic was used for that, but I'm not a chromatic player, no.
Okay,
I respect chromatic players very much. The sound of the chromatic, generally speaking, doesn't suit me.
So, okay, so yeah, so you do that one, and there's a 6/8 march and a hornpipe on there. Is it a time for another tune, also played on the tremolo? So,
yeah.
So what about 6/8 time? That's another time that maybe people who are interested in traditional music might find tricky to get to grips with. How do you deal with 6/8 time?
I'm at home with them. You know, I love playing them. I find it easy because I whistle them to myself all day anyway. Very often learn tunes or relearn them and keep them in my mind by whistling them. So it's no problem.
So that, like you say, getting the tunes into your head, is that a really important part? I've heard from you that you don't read music, so you're playing all the tunes by ear, or you learn the tunes by ear, do you?
What I do is I hear the tune. If I like a tune, or if I love a tune, I'll play it. If I don't really love the tune, I don't play it. So there are many, many, many tunes that are beautiful, and I thought it would be the reverse. I thought, starting this, and I wonder what I'll do for tunes. And there's so many, you don't know which ones to discard because you want to record them all. So I chose tunes that I'd heard. So the learning process was one of hearing the tune and then playing it over and over and over and double-checking it. I can't read music, but I can read it slowly. I've never taken on board to learn reading music, but I can check certain bits that I've got it right. If I suspect it, and I haven't got that quite right there, I don't think, I'll check it against the dots, against the music. But once I've done that, I continue to play by ear. And when I do a concert, a full concert, particularly in village halls and in festivals, it's usually 3/4 of an hour or an hour maximum playing. But when we maybe go to village halls, we play 2 45-minute slots, and I play upwards of 55 separate tunes in a full concert, and slow airs and fast stuff. And the average amount of parts in a tune is about 3. So I've generally got between 55 and 60 tunes where the average contents of the tune in terms of what to learn is about 3 parts. So it's a lot of preparation.
I like to play some traditional music myself, but I find sometimes that you can mix them up together. Do you ever have that problem where you're sort of mixing up the tunes?
Yes, and I'll tell you a good story there. I played this Celtic Connections Festival in Glasgow several times, and it's a big festival, as you probably know. And when we came off one of the night, we came off stage, Malcolm said to me, you know, you played that set of 2/4s in the second half, 2/4 marches. You played it beautifully. It's a great pity that it was the wrong tune you started off with. Now, a lot of the pipe tunes, they start off similarly, and it's like hitting black ice and getting all over the place. When you lose it, when you go off track, you're off track, and you've got to commit to what you've taken on, the wrong tune. Yeah. It doesn't happen very often, but it did happen that night.
So another great song on there, and I'll probably pronounce this wrong again, is it the Balachulish Stomp?
Balachulish. Balachulish is a small village near, you've heard of Glencoe, you've probably gone through Glencoe on the way up. It's a beautiful part of the world again, and it's a small village just at the side of the salt water as you go through the glen on the west coast. It's north of Oban. I always had a love of Cajun music. Malcolm and I decided to try something like that. And I play the octave-tuned Honor Comet harmonica on that. And we're just thinking, what do we call it? I just came up with the idea, the Balachulish Stomp. We are Celts from the west coast of Scotland, but it was Louisiana type of music. So although some of the tunes emanated from Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, which is full of gales, and Malcolm wrote a couple of the tunes himself, you know. So, but it was to try and emulate the Cajun sound. I don't know if we did it right or not, but that's the story.
So, and also on the last track, The Home at Last, which is a kind of hidden track, you play the little lady harmonica, yeah?
Yes.
Which is a nice little four-hole harmonica. I saw you doing the trick where you put the little harmonica on a toothbrush and pretend to be brushing your teeth while you're playing the harmonica.
Something like this? But I've got it on the table here.
that's a great trick. I'm going to steal that trick, Donald. I like that a lot.
Well, what I do is actually say to an audience that hasn't seen or heard it before, I'll just say, I'm really sorry, folks, at the interval, I had to have something to eat and I must clean my teeth. So I take this in a toilet bag and they just say, what on earth is this guy about? And then they just love it. It's a novel thing. It's to entertain, you know.
So we'll move on to your third album, which is called, is it Keel Road? So yes. Keel Road, is that, I understand that's the road that you grew up in?
It's where I first saw daylight. It's a road in the village of Benderloch in Argyll, north of Oban. And the tune came into my head when I was practicing with Donnie, who my guitarist now. Donnie's been with me for quite some time. And I was practicing in his house and we had finished our practice. We were relaxing. The tune just came into my head. And I thought it brought back memories of my grandparents there at New Year. It was whiskey for the men and port wine or sherry, one sherry for the ladies. And they sat around the peat fire and sang songs and played music for a week. It went on day and night. And I was a child at the time, and I remember with vivid memories of that. And, of course, at that time in the Highlands, there was no electricity. I was 7, before I saw electricity when we shifted to the lowlands of Scotland. So it was a more mystic, faraway world then. And the lovely feeling of togetherness at the fireside, peat fire, that came into my head, that tune, and that's what it is.
So another song on this album is a first and a harmonica, I understand, a pibroch.
A pibroch is actually, I call it Highland blues. It emanated from the fireside. Somebody composing a tune about a lost love or emigration or whatever. Then the pipes were brought in and formalised. A lot of the music was formalised in the military pipe bands. And all the different regiments had their own pipers, etc. Pibroch then, it was referred to as classical music on the bagpipes. I understand what people say when they say that, but I don't see it that way. It's been formalised a bit. There's a particular setting. There's what we call an urlar. It's the ground in the first part. Then it builds up and there's more embellishments and it becomes more complicated as it goes. I was just trying to prove to myself I could have a go at a pibroch. It had never been done in harmonica before.
And another song on there, which will be the introduction on the podcast, it's a classic Gaelic song, which is The Cuckoo.
My mother sang that all her days, and I remember as a child her singing that in Gaelic. It comes from the Arnamachan Peninsula, and it's about a woman speaking to the cuckoo, the bird, the cuckoo, probably in the month of May, when the cuckoo arrives and with its beautiful song. And we're blessed up on the west coast there. We get a whole myriad of them suddenly arrive, and you can hear numerous ones at the same time singing away. And she was speaking, she had a broken heart. Her lover had left her. In Gaelic, she's really saying, you are beautiful. You come here with your lovely singing every year. You come back and visit me, but he's gone. I'll never see him again. And it's a sad song. So normally that is sung quite faster, but I like the slow ears down a bit.
And I'm talking about Gaelic. So there's a song sung in Gaelic on the album. Is that you singing? Who's singing that?
That's me having a go.
Oh,
I'm not sure about how I succeeded with the language, though. You know, I was advised by friends, fellow musicians and speakers of the language. I heard that since I was knee-high as well. My mother sang that all her days.
Savatin nor yerin ganeshlin gangruaim.
How do you feel about the importance of preserving languages like Gaelic? You know, I was reading about it early on that 58,000 people now speak Gaelic on the west side of Scotland. So, keeping that tradition up, how do you feel about that?
I can't speak the language just because my parents left the Highlands, and I would have heard it and learned it, no doubt. I've got to be realistic and say we're living in a much smaller world than before, with communications we can Zoom somebody in Texas and have a chat with them. That was, it's the exact opposite of what it was in the Highlands and Islands. It was a very close community language, and it was local. It was spoken, nearly the whole of Scotland anyway, spoke Gaelic some centuries back. We call it Gaelic here, the Irish call it Gaelic. It's the same language. And the ancient kings of Scotland, the original ones, they came from Ireland anyway. So there wasn't such a thing as Ireland and Scotland. They were just Celtic Gaelic islands together. So there is a tremendous uniqueness about it. I think it should be preserved and spoken, but most people who speak it understand that it couldn't really work as the main medium for conversing, because English is spoken worldwide. And we live in a world, a big world as well as our locality. So I see a place for it, however. I wouldn't like to see it dying out and not being spoken, but we've got the realistic at the same time.
What I find about your albums, moving on to the next one now, the Dreams and Dances albums, you know, they're very atmospheric. They do sort of summon, like you say, the misty out of the sky. You can sort of picture that. And they're very soothing and mostly instrumentals. And definitely it's got that nice mood to it, hasn't it?
Well, I was pleased with that album. I thought we did well. My producer there was a young lad who works in a band called Tidelines, and they play all over the UK, and very soon they'll be all over the world. They're marvellous. But broadly, my one choice, you know, the material, I thought it worked pretty well. I've been lucky that I've always had good people with me.
Yeah, I mean, it really adds to the music. You say you've got some great musicians on there complimenting the harmonica. It sounds great. Yeah. And again, hopefully a testament to the appeal of, you know, these musicians liking the sound of the harmonica playing this traditional music. So, I mean, again, you've got quite a few pipe tunes on there. You've got the Clappers.
Why I called it the Clappers.
Yeah, go on.
Because there's a phrase here, it's a colloquialism, you know, oh, he was going like the Clappers. He was going so fast. I'm playing them, they're jigs. And I'm implicitly saying to the listener is, you think they're a bit in the fast side, I'm aware of it.
And you've got some barn dances on there, so that's a dance tune. So have you performed these songs at dances?
No, I don't play at dances, but all these tunes would be played at dances. Oh, yes. I do concerts, you know, I can't play for dances because I would just be dead at the end of the night, you know.
A song on there is The Inevitable Journey, and play a certain position on the harmonica. Do you want to tell us about that one?
The tune itself, The Inevitable Journey, is quite simple. The young lad that wrote it, he saw a tune being necessary just to refer to the people that left the Highlands and Islands over the last few decades, particularly coming down to the Central Belt, Glasgow and Edinburgh, and looking for work. So it was an inevitable journey. They couldn't find work where they were. So the Highlands were depopulated a couple of hundred years ago. There was the Highland Clearances, and the landed gentry got rid of people, sent them out to America and Canada, and they replaced them with sheep. It was more economic to have sheep than human beings. That side of the Highlands, the depopulation still exists to this day. There's not a lot of work around. There's not many industries, so people have got to head down south. And that's what the tune's about. As far as the recording of the tune, I thought it was a good candidate for an experiment. I muck about for fun on second position playing and play a wee bit of blues or whatever just for my own enjoyment. But the other guys can do it much, much, much better than I. However, I wanted to try an experiment out. And the guy who produced that, he said to me, I don't think this will work. It won't work. And I said, can we try it? Just do it and see. And he pieced it together and he shook my hand. He said, congratulations, you were right. You know, it seemed to come out okay. And the tune was fine for it. It was a good candidate to take for that experiment. So I'm underpinning it. I'm doing the second position playing on the 10-hole diatonic along with the trillo in first position. And on the record, it goes from F into G, and then I go from G to A. And when I go to A, in comes the second position on a D 10 hole.
Yeah, so a nice mixture of, like I say, harmonicas and positions there, yes. So following that album, in 2015, you had the great honour of appearing on Charlie McCoy's Celtic Dreams album,
playing
the song Lonesome Eye. So how did that come about?
How it came about was I was honoured twice, actually, to be invited. I was over last year in Oklahoma, and I was invited to play at SPA, the Society for the Preservation and Advancement of the Harmonica, which, as you know, is a huge harmonica festival in the States. And Charlie was in the audience, actually, in our audience. I met him briefly. He was signing autographs and speaking to people and afterwards, but I had a chat with him. And I'm a huge Elvis fan. I love Highland music, of course, but as a young person growing up in the modern world, you're exposed to other things. And I just loved Elvis Presley. And I thought, this is somebody who's played with Elvis so much and so many other people. And I didn't know how he would respond when I spoke to him. And he was lovely, a lovely, lovely man. So I kept in touch, and one of the albums you mentioned there, I forget which one it is, I did a thing called Gaelic Country. And I sent Charlie out the album. I said, it's from Scotland, but you might be interested in it. You're an expert at country music. And he came back to me and he said, would you be up for doing that Slow Air together and put it on my next album, which was his then 37 solo album. I think he's done 42 or 43 thus far. And I couldn't believe it. Charlie McCoy, a marvellous world-class musician, who's probably, I think he is, the most recorded in history. I was delighted and honoured when he asked me to send that out. So we sent it out to Nashville and he did his thing in it. A lovely slow air by the late Jerry Hollins from Nova Scotia, from Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia. He composed and played many, many fiddle tunes, and it's a lovely thing. And I took it and slowed it down a little bit, slower than the Cape Breton people play it. I like to take the slow air slowly. And Charlie seemed to like it. He was really very complimentary and lovely about it. And he said, when you're doing your next one, I'll reciprocate. And I did that.
So did you record it remotely, or were you in the same location physically when you did so?
We sent it out electronically. We took it from the guy Young Ross I was talking about, Ross Wilson. He had all this stuff, and he said, I can send this out to Charlie, and he could do his thing in it.
Yeah, superb. And so, as you say, Charlie reciprocated by appearing on your most recent album, From My Heart, in 2017.
Yes.
That's the song New Island Waltz, yeah.
The New Island Waltz, it was written by another talented guy who plays the accordion, Leah Douglas, and he's from Skye, there on the Skye. He said to me at the time, of the first one, he said, when you're doing your next one, get back to me and I'll reciprocate. So I thought, this has got a country flavour to it. And I thought Charlie would do a good job, and he did a lovely, lovely job. And he harmonises beautifully with different harmonicas at the end, towards the end. I never in my life ever thought that I would ever find myself recording with somebody like Charlie McCoy.
Great honour. Yeah. And again, was this recorded remotely?
It was the same way. We sent it out to Nashville and he put his stuff on it. Oh no, I beg your pardon. There wasn't the final thing. The gaps were left for Charlie. In it, I play, Charlie follows, he plays the same notes, and we do the same with the B part, and then there's a guitar bit in the middle, and then we both come in at the end together, and he does wonderful recording on it. So the spaces were left by the producer, by Young Ross, and they were exactly the length, and Charlie understood that well and did a lovely job. So, and I had the honour of meeting up with him and his wife. My wife and I went through to Edinburgh last year, and we had dinner with Charlie in just off Prince's Street in Edinburgh, yeah. And he's great fun, wonderful fun. No ego, no boisterousness. he just said to me before we parted, he said, I've been lucky in life. I've had a great life in music. I've been very blessed, very humble.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy, as you say. Yeah. I had him on the podcast, so yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, I know. And it's a great interview with him, yeah.
So more songs on there. You do a duetting with an accordion on the Highland Scottish, is it?
Highland Scottish, yeah. It's simply a 2-4 march played faster for dancing to. It's just taken that bit up in tempo, and the certain tunes lend themselves more than others. There's a spring in the tune. It's a lovely dance. It's quite a difficult dance to do, actually. It's quite heavy on the feet.
Again, doing that duetting with the accordion, your interest in the accordion when you first started playing.
And that's a young lad who I heard playing in the pub, and I knew that Ross, that I was referring to, was moving on. He produced my stuff after that, you know. But Martin Skeen, and Martin's a multi-instrumentalist. He plays cello on an Irish lawyer on that album. He plays whistles, not on the album, but I know he plays whistles, and he plays piano accordion and button accordion, and both are two different worlds of playing. If you play one, it's not necessarily the case, you can play the other. And he plays keyboard, piano. He's just wonderful. I love him to bits. So that's the guys I've got. I've got Donnie McKenzie plays guitar, and Martin Skeen plays with me.
You've also got a polka on there as well, the Rockfield Polka.
Polka, that was a band from Oban, Colin Campbell, and Colin sadly died of cancer, and that was the last recording he ever did. And apparently he was so ill that the shoulder straps of his accordion were sliding down his arm. He was so weak. And I think he was trying to say, a lot of accordion players play continental stuff, they play Swedish or they play German stuff, and a lot of stuff they do is polkas. And I think he was trying to say, yes, I play pipe and Gaelic stuff, but I can play polkas as well. So he wrote that tune, and I loved it, you know. So we did that one. It was a different dimension again. It was a polka. So
on one of the tunes, Highland Express, you start off with a bit of a blues riff.
Yes. I didn't want to overdo it. I just did a touch of it, you know.
I mean, a lot of people I speak to on here, is blues something that you have listened to much blues harmonic? Is that something you've tried to learn?
I haven't tried to learn it because there's a lot to it. There's a lot of great techniques. You know, I read about them and see them and hear them. I listen to them on Facebook. So many people corresponding, and particularly the Harmonica UK, which was National Harmonica League of Great Britain. I was down in Bristol twice, and I met so many of the brilliant players. And over in America, of course, you know, and it's lovely to run into people like Brendan Power, who plays first, second position, any position in the harmonica, and brilliantly, you know. Yes, I admire these guys so much.
Well, it's nice that you're playing a little bit of blues on there too. So that's your 5 albums, and obviously people can get hold of your albums through the website, and there'll be a link to the website on the podcast page, so people can check that out.
It's www.donald-black.com. They can read about it. There'll be some sets we've played in there they can hear as well, you know.
You mentioned your mother earlier on, and you used to play with her, and I think she's called Christina, was it? And
Christina, yes.
Yeah, I understand you actually appeared with her on television when she was 86 years old.
Yes, she was 86 years old, and, you know, her memory had gone, and 10 minutes after that, she couldn't remember having done it. It was lovely. I was looking at the footage the other night, and it's quite emotional. And, you know, we actually had a wee tune together on the two-row button accordion as well, but that wasn't put on television. They chose to use the harmonicas. But we could have a wee tune, nothing fancy, just the two-row button accordion, and then we'd have a tune and the harmonica together.
You mentioned you've been to Spa. You were the first Scot ever to be invited to Spa, is that right?
Yes, I'm very honoured about that. And we were asked back, and about some years back now, and there was problems with getting the necessary documentation to play in the States. So ultimately, I managed to go over to Belfast and got the right visa, short visa, just for playing at it. So we played twice. We played in Kansas City in 2005 and played in Tulsa last year. And we were given the banquet spot in Tulsa, the dinner, after the dinner, one of the spots in the banquet on the Friday night, the last night of playing. And we were very honoured, actually. We played in front of quite a crowd of people and a lot of top harmonica players in the audience. So it was rather an honour. And as it was, down in Bristol, to play down in Bristol in the Cayley House in Bristol twice, yeah, for the National Harmonica League, yeah.
And you played, as you mentioned earlier on, you played in various countries, obviously in Scotland,
mm-hmm.
England.
Moscow, outdoors in the back of a lorry in 3 feet of snow, and 90 police to protect us. The biggest audience I've played to thus far was 25,000 in football stadium in Lithuania. And they went crazy after Gorbachev liberalised the Baltic states and they decided to go west, so much so that they had a Country Western Festival. And I contacted them online and I said, I play Celtic music, and a lot of the country music stemmed from Scotland and Ireland. There was a great input from the people who emigrated to America there. And they said, would you come out? So I went out with Donnie and we played in front of 25,000, and they were doing the conga to one of the sets of reels we were doing in a dilapidated football stadium, and they were lovely people. And I went to Glasgow University to the Slavonic Studies department to learn some of the language and write it down phonetically to speak to them in their own language, and they went crazy. They said, we love your music, but you spoke to us in Lithuanian. Mm-hmm. And we thoroughly enjoyed our time there, yes. And then there was a guy from Russia, he invited us to Moscow. We played in Moscow twice for St. Patrick's Day Festival. It wasn't Scott's Festival. It was in the month of March. And it was incredible. Yeah. I've actually got footage of inside the Kremlin. We went for a visit, as the public could then do, and now. And I played Scotland Brave outside one of the cherished small churches in the Kremlin. And Ivan the Terrible and Frederick the Great and all these people are embalmed. And I didn't realise it was offending. And I took the harmonica and I played Scotland the Brave. And I've got footage of this guard with his big long grey coat blowing a whistle quickly. And I had to stop.
Yes, you've certainly got around with that harmonica. Right? Yeah. You also appear in 4 books on harmonica.
A couple of them I've just referred to very quickly. Winslow, yeah, he just briefly referred to me in his book. And Winslow, I know Winslow, I've met him a couple of times now over in the States. He's incredible. He's really, really does know his stuff and hugely enthusiastic. And I was rather honoured. He sent me a copy of it and signed it. And Charlie, in his book, 50 Cents on a Box Top, it's called. Yeah. And the guy that wrote it for him said, if you tell me other people that have been on all your albums, I'll mention the names of them. So in the middle of the book, there's a photo of Charlie with Elvis and some of the musicians. And at the back of the book, yours truly. And I'm thinking, I'm in the same book as Elvis Presley. But there was a guy, a German, a long time ago he did, and he wrote a lot on harmonica, Christoph Wagner. And it's called Die Mundharmonika, the Mouth Harmonica. And he did quite a thing there. And then, of course, the Encyclopedia of the Harmonica by the chap from Chicago.
Peter Crampert.
Peter Crampert, yeah.
So, and you've appeared on television quite a lot as well, obviously in Scotland on the sort of Gaelic.
Well, I haven't done so much of late, but I did for quite a while, yeah. And there's been a lot of repeats, particularly with COVID, a lot of repeats on television. So it seems that they're playing all the old stuff again with a lot of artists, you know, and I'm getting a share of exposure again. Although I had a full head of hair then, but I don't know.
So if we move on now to a bit more about the playing style. So I know you want to talk about the mouth vibrato that you use.
On the 10 hole, I do one on the 10 hole, and I'll just get one right now. And it was picked up by 2 people only that I've ever met that picked up on this. One was a friend of mine from New York, and he plays harmonica, and he used to play with the Boss, Springsteen, in the New Jersey early days. And he was playing over in Glasgow, and he contacted me. He had bought my first album in the States. He said he would like to meet up. And we met him at the hotel, and I was playing a slow air. And he said, you're playing a mouth vibrato. I said, I've never heard of it. He said, neither have I, but I'm calling it mouth vibrato. The other person that picked up on that was Phil Louis. He's in the National Harmonica League. And when I came off stage in Bristol, he said to the audience, did you notice he doesn't do the movement with his hands? So I find that I've got more control just doing it. There's no hands used there at all. It's just right at the front of my mouth. It's just part of the expressive thing. I just like doing it there, and they seemed not to have ever seen that before, for better or for worse. The other one, another thing I do is with a tremolo. I try to emulate the mandolin or the bouzouki or banjo, whatever, doing this. You would have noticed that the higher the note, the cleaner it is, the better it is.
How are you making that effect?
Two aspects to that. One is that you pretend that it's a tremolo that's gone on the big echo series, the biggest of the echo series, and you gently caress the harmonica, just lightly. And what you do after that is, you know how us Scots were very guttural with the consonant R? We are R. Maybe Germany and some of the Russians as well, they use, speak R. If you do that silently and put your finger in front of your mouth and go, it's successive small jets of air come out and it goes right into the slots and you're gently caressing a harmonica. I don't overdo it if I'm playing a set. I do a bit of it and go back to the 10 hole probably if I'm playing a slow air. But I switch to the tremolo for that effect. And it works to a degree. It's something different.
I believe you've also helped develop a Mixolydian tuned tremolo with Holmer, the Highlander.
Yes, the Highlander we took out, can't remember how many years back now. What we refer to technically is the 5580. That's determined by the amount of notes in it. The double side of tremolo in the key of A and D. And on the A side, I took two G sharps, high G sharp and low G sharp, and made them G and just flattened them to G by filing the reeds. Because there's an integral part, one note of a pipe tune, many pipe tunes, that you cannot really play the tune unless you can get that, what we call the flattened seventh. Here's an example. And that note, that is on the tuned harmonica. This is what it was on the Richter tuned one, which I retuned myself. You can hear the difference there.
Good invasion, yeah. So obviously you play a lot of tremolo, and a question I ask each time, Donald, is if you had 10 minutes to practice, what would you spend that time doing? So maybe for people who are interested in playing the tremolo, what would you do in your 10 minutes?
Accuracy. Now, there's different the slots in the tremolo, the apertures where the reeds go into and people blow and suck. They differ from harmonica to harmonica. So you've got to get used to, some of them are quite small and the accuracy has got to be much greater for certain harmonicas than others because you can miss it. You know, you've got to watch your land exactly on it. So accuracy and really getting, once you know, people learn the scales, but they've got to get some music. I'm assuming that they're starting out. Play a tune you know, not something you don't know. And play something easier. You like Jingle Bells. The first six notes are the same. There's a lot of the same note there, but you're beginning to play a tune. And once you've done that, go a bit more adventurous and do exactly the same again with a more, slightly more difficult tune. It might be best to play a slow piece that you know and know back, you know well, you know it back to front. And you know if you're playing it correctly if you don't. So you try and find that note that you might not be getting correctly. But take your time with it. And don't worry about learning the whole tune maybe. There may be three or four parts to that one tune. Even if you can get the first few bars to start with, get the first part and go over it and over it and over it. And then you work on the second part. And then sometimes you forget the first part. And then put the two together. But don't worry about the third or the fourth. They'll look after themselves once you're ready. And just don't be afraid to experiment and just see what you can do.
So, yeah, if we just move on to the last section now, we're talking mm-hmm. a little bit through gears. We talked about, obviously, how you playing different types of harmonicas and tremolos and diatonics and even a bit of chromatic and mm-hmm. Is important. So what is your favourite tremolo?
My favourite tremolo is the one that I've got a supply of. And I got those, I procured those because I knew that I might not always get them. I thought, well, just in case. And thank God I did because they were taken off the market. Honor took them and they're Honor. They're tremolos, and they have the faults. The wood swells up when you're playing too much with the saliva and can rip your face if you don't watch what you're doing. But they have a lovely sound, and it's always been the horn of tremolo I played. So
is that a model you can't buy anymore?
You cannot buy anymore. They've taken the Echo Harp series off completely. And, of course, the Chinese have got a foothold now in Horner. Crucial thing is, Neil, anyway, that in the market that they supplied, because of the pop cult and because of large volumes of sales, in 1987, Horner sold a billionth harmonica, and most of these were 10 holes. So they shipped stuff out to the States, and as you know, the African-Americans very intuitively discovered that if you play these in second position, my God, you can play blues. And then it took off. So harmonica companies, particularly Horner and one or two others, they were quite understandably focusing on 10-hole and chromatic as well. So the tremolo was regarded as a toy rather than a musical instrument for quite some time. There always have been the sort of poorer relation in attention by the companies. So I feel that more attention might be, you know, because they play them all over Asia. It's Asian tuned is the when you get rid of the tuning. I just was fortunate in the sense that I purchased enough that'll see me out. You know, I've got quite a lot of them. But they don't last long because of very thin reed. And the other one is, it's luck with saliva. Salivation is one's salvation when playing the harmonica, because the wood that's used now swells up and it can rip your face open nearly. You know, it's really fierce on the lips. So in order to hit that note accurately every time, you've got to perpetually salivate just at the right time for each note, you know, and that's impossible. But what I do is I've got a sponge in a tray and water, and I tell the listening audience, I say, this is full of the finest malt whiskey from Scotland. And as the night goes on, it gets much better for me and much worse for you. And of course, it's water I'm dipping it in. But then if I make a mistake, I'll say to them, anybody spot the mistake? That blooming whiskey again. But there is a serious side to it. And it is when you tackle tunes that these have never been meant to be played in the harmonica. A lot of these tunes were for fiddle or bagpipes. You're not running out of saliva when you're playing the pipe and on the fiddle either, you know, and they're not easy instruments either. But I chose to do this and I'm not complaining. It's been wonderful experiences with people that I never thought.
Yeah, and what about what embouchure are you using? Are you puckering when you're playing mainly the tremolo?
No, I just do as I feel. I try and accommodate, to some extent, the shortcomings in the harmonica. I mentioned the wood swelling and whatnot. But I try to accommodate the type of instrument it is. It's inside your mouth and all the time. It's horizontal action rather than blowing or sucking out the way. It's a different type of instrument. It's very physically close to you and it's very emotionally close to you. But I just do as I feel within the confines of what the instrument will allow me to do. I just sometimes get carried away and I love getting carried away. You know, I love slow ears.
And when you're playing, the microphone you use?
It's an SP, normal microphone. I don't use anything with any changes whatsoever. Straight into the mic. And I've got to be conscious of the fact that when I'm playing, that, you know, I can get carried away and come away from the mic too much or too near. So I've got to self-discipline, make sure I'm a constant distance from the mic and express at the same time.
Do you use any effect pedals?
No,
or any
none.
Great, and then so final question, Donald. What are you planning to do? Hopefully, we're getting good news now on the pandemic. Have you got some plans to get out there playing again?
I very much hope so. There's two factors. One is the pandemic, and the other one is, well, I was supposed to be touring Michigan area roundabout and Toronto, Ontario area this year, but that fell through. So hopefully we can, travel will open up, we can play there again. Mm-hmm. But it's like a drug. You can't let go. Mm-hmm. And I still want to play and enjoy the music and the people I meet and the audiences we play to.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, so hopefully I'll get out playing again next year. So thanks very much, Donald, for joining me today. It's been
Thank
great.
Thank you, Neil. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. It wouldn't be the same without you. And thanks again for my sponsor, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, helping me keeping this thing going. They build great purpose-built equipment for the harmonica, so be sure to check them out. Donald, take us to Bonnie Scotland with a slow air.